welcome to the September episode of House Call, a podcast dedicated to your personal health and well-being. If you desire to live a healthier life, then you will be concerned about the food you eat, the liquids you drink, and the exercise you get. House Call will not only provide you with valuable health information, but will create an awareness of the importance of healthy living. This podcast is hosted by two board-certified physicians, Drs. Peter Landless and Zeno Charles Marcel. They write a regular column on various health topics that appear in the Adventist Review magazine. If you'd like to read more of their columns, go to adventistreview.org. Today, the doctors are going to talk about the benefits of water and whether those fancy waters with vitamins and alkalines are really necessary. They begin by referencing a letter they recently received from a reader.
You know, recently there was a question which came into us and said, you know, years ago drinking water was simple, tap, cooler or fountain. Today, the questioner said, they counted 32 kinds of water in the supermarket, and friends say that deionized alkaline water is best. Really? Well, that's the question, Zeno, that water, is water just water? Tell me a little bit about it. Why is it so important? And why is drinking water all that important? Because, you know, there is a lot of talk about this right now.
Yes. Well, I think that the reader is probably very confused about what he or she is seeing in the supermarket. Because as you go down the aisles, there are these just different labels and different qualities. And as you go on the internet or you read in magazines, there are all these different claims about water that it makes it more and more confusing to the public. Mm-hmm. So I can understand the question, but water is important because water is considered the elixir of life. Without water, we die. So water is important. Now, whether
it's vital.
It's vital. You know, whether we're talking about the kind of water now, which is a new phenomenon, that becomes an issue, because along with this kind of water comes claims about water.
Right. And so there clearly is no doubt that water is essential to life.
No doubt at all.
Without which we cannot live, we will not live with, we don't have it. And the other thing which I think is just an important aside is that not only is water important, it is the best drink to drink. When you compare it to fruit juices and all the other things that are available, if you want to stay healthy, pure, clean water. But now, how much should we drink? You know, this is a question as well. It's always the question that comes to the physician. Well, you know, how much is good for me? What is the least that is good for me? Tell us.
Well, it depends on who you are, how much water you will need to drink. There is an amount of water. If you go beyond that, for most human beings, it will produce water intoxication, which is not healthy. It will cause the amount of sodium in your blood to be too low, and that is a dangerous situation. But how much is enough? Well, it depends on your situation. Seven things. If we look at the size of the individual, a larger person usually would need more water than a smaller person. Age may play a factor there, because the distribution of water for a baby is different from the distribution of water for an adult, or even a dwarf, okay, who may be of a small stature. They may have a different way of compartmentalizing their muscles and their the fat and the bone and so on. So the amount of water for them would be less, and therefore they need to drink less water. We also are looking at the diet. Someone who has a diet that is naturally water-laden. So, for instance, if they're eating more fruits and vegetables, they naturally contain more water than if they're eating grains or if they're eating meat or cheese, something like that. So the diet also plays a part. The climate, of course. If someone is in a warm climate that is dry, they will tend to need more water than if they're in a cooler climate. Depending on the amount of the humidity, the ambient humidity, would also change someone's need for the amount of water that they have to drink. Similarly, their physical activity.
Sure.
People who are more physically active, and we all know this, you know, more physical activity usually accompanies more sweating, even though there's some people that that can do a lot of physical activity and not sweat a lot. But the more you sweat, okay, due to physical activity, the greater amount of water that you need to replace that. Some people are on medication. So if they're taking diuretics in particular, right, they'll be urinating more water, and therefore they have to drink more water or become more thirsty.
Mm-hmm.
And then their medical condition. There's some medical conditions where, of course, you know, Peter, with congestive heart failure and whatnot, we limit the amount of water that person should be having.
Sure.
And we limit the amount of salt. And the salt in the diet actually plays a part in how much water people will need and how much water they can tolerate.
So it's a very, very finely, beautifully regulated system. The you talked in the beginning about water intoxication.
Yes.
And I'm always grateful as a physician, and particularly when I was treating patients, that it's very difficult to become water intoxicated, because once your thirst has been assuaged, once you're no longer thirsty, you generally don't feel unless that you need to drink more, unless it becomes some kind of compulsive behavior.
Right.
And it really, the water intoxication that is done by an individual themselves is usually in situations where there is an emotional or a mental health issue.
That is correct.
And so that's a great blessing. We've been fearfully and wonderfully made
with
these wonderful mechanisms that control thirst and also tell us when we need to drink.
Exactly. And, you know, when people are not in control of the amount of water that they're drinking, and somebody else has to control that, that's when we end up with some of these problems with either water deprivation or water intoxication, because they don't have, this is the other person, they don't have the internal mechanisms to be able to tell how much water we actually need.
They don't have say over it. And that's partly, you mentioned as well, and that just brought back many memories to my mind when you talked about the very young and even in adults, but babies, apart from their surface area relation to their size, they are very sensitive to water loss.
Exactly.
But so are the elderly. And it's very easy for elderly people to become dehydrated, and partly because they don't pay attention to the need for water, and they become susceptible to many changes, including confusion.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the ongoing constipation and so on. So one needs to guard for those things, but all of us need to drink adequate amounts. Now, it's all well and good to say adequate amounts, but how much? How would I know? You know, I don't count the glasses of water I drink a day. So tell me, how much water should I drink a day?
There are different ways of being able to calculate, and every one of them that I have used serves a particular function. But
one for
generally
somebody
speaking,
simple like me.
Generally speaking, one can look at the color of their urine. If the urine is darkly colored, strongly yellow, or whatever, right? But particularly if it's strongly yellow, then that means that you're probably not getting enough water.
Sure.
And as a rule of thumb, we tell people, look, drink enough so that the urine is, you know, yellow tinged, or it looks like water itself.
Clear.
And if it's nice and clear like that, then you know that you're getting an adequate amount of water.
I think that's very true. And I think you've already covered very adequately what informs how much we should drink, whether we're sweating, whether we're in hot environments, doing a lot of extra work and exercise. All of those things are important. And thank you for making it very, very clear.
All right. Well, you know, but Peter, I am not the expert on water. We all have to have some part to play in understanding how this water thing works, right? So I'm going to throw you a question. There are some controversies that have come up about water today. How about the kinds of water? What does that mean?
You know, you probably know to scratch where it itches when you ask me that question, because I'm a little, how shall I put it? I'm a purist in that respect, uh-huh. because water is water.
Uh-huh.
And I think one of the things when we talk about water that I have to bring into the conversation is that bottled water, which has become ubiquitous, it's available everywhere. There's nowhere you go virtually where you can't get bottled water. And we see what that has done to the environment as far as plastic is concerned. So there's a tremendous blessing to having the availability of clean water, which is what we need. But then it's also led to a marketing spree. And right at the beginning, the question that was raised here was there's so many different kinds of water. And let me start right out with the one which tends to get me going the quickest. And you know which one that is?
Yeah, you're talking about alkaline water.
Alkaline water, yeah. And it actually did me good to go and do a little bit of reading on this as well, additional reading. And partly, I've always worked on a very clinical approach to medicine and health. And that is based on physiology.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about thirst and what governs the amount of water we take in. And when we know we need water, it's so beautifully the mechanism that there are sensors, both pressure sensors and sensors in the brain, which measure the concentration of the blood. I mean, it's just an amazing system.
We're fearfully and wonderfully made.
We are. And then when you come to the acidity of the body or the alkalinity of the body, that is so beautifully managed by a chemical buffer system that has been created in us that keeps our body pH, the level of acidity or alkalinity, at an exact 7.4. And what amazed me as a medical student and as an intern and as a clinician, except in the extremes of illness, you take a blood gas on a patient, the pH of the blood is 7.4. And that amazed me. And so when you take in something which is alkaline, the body is so programmed because of the acid in the stomach and the way that things work. As the water is absorbed, it will be buffered in the system, whether it's alkaline or acidic, to reach the level of 7.4, so that it is safe to, because that's the best environmental condition for the functioning of the cells is at that pH. And so it took a lot for me to begin to think about there being any benefit to alkaline water.
Now, isn't there some natural way from how you eat or something like that would promote a more naturally alkaline environment?
Well, that was interesting as well. At the time, I studied physiology, and as a physician, and you know, as a medical student, you study physiology all your life.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a particular paper which came out, and we're talking in the 70s now, the 1970s, mm-hmm. not the 1870s. There was this article which came out and pointed out that vegetarians have predominantly more alkaline urine.
Okay.
At the same time, it also showed that people who ate a predominantly vegetarian diet had better preserved renal function, kidney function, at every age level. And the way that was tested was to give the individual a high protein load. And those who were used to eating the kind of protein you get in a vegetarian diet, as opposed to the meat, the fish, the shellfish, and poultry, and so on, they were able to deal with the protein load, the vegetarian group, so much more adequately. And there was a preserved renal function, kidney function, for a longer time period in their lifespan. So alkalinity of the urine, the fact that the kidney is better able to deal with protein loads in the kind of foods we eat, well, there could be something to having less acidic water. But there isn't a great deal of evidence out there to show that if you drink alkaline water, which is marketed so widely, that you're going to have better longevity. There have been some rat models,
yes,
that show longer life in rats that are exposed to alkaline water. But I would say that if the water is pure and clean, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But and I think there is a strong industrial and financial component to people who market alkaline water.
So then there's probably no problem with someone who drinks a few liters of alkaline water a week just to drink it.
Well, you know, it's the same as well, maybe not the same, but it's very similar to the amount of food supplements that people use. You know, a number of these food supplements don't do any harm. They don't do any good.
Mm-hmm.
The harm they do is often little to us. The good they do is to the people who sell it. So, yeah, probably won't do people harm. Yeah, I think that's right. But I also think that I wish they were all priced at the same level as all the water, because they virtually do the same good.
So when we look at the claims, for instance, there's the claim that drinking alkaline water increases the longevity. What would you say about that?
Well, you see, it's been shown in rats that it does that, and it's been associated, and also gives them longer lifespan. That has to be shown in humans,
mm-hmm,
to really be valid and validated.
But the studies that you're talking about also showed that it had a detrimental effect on some of the rats too, because they had retarded growth, isn't that
exactly
right?
Exactly, they had retarded growth. And so many of these tests raise more questions than they do answers. And so I would not, frankly, personally, encourage people to go for alkaline water, because I don't know that the evidence base is such that it does a huge amount of good.
Even for osteoporosis?
Particularly for osteoporosis. Tell me about the osteoporosis.
Well, you know, the issue is that some people say that it prevents osteoporosis caused by an acidic diet.
But what is the evidence?
But the evidence doesn't show that at all.
Exactly.
There's no evidence for or against.
Exactly.
That.
And you see a lot. Here is where and we struggle, and I think consumers struggle so much, because to get the actual truth, so many advertisements are made based on what is going to sell the best.
Mm-hmm.
And on claims that are made which have not been validated, or even some pilot studies which may have shown some promise but no significance, and then it gets used in the marketing value. So, no, there is no evidence that it makes any difference to osteoporosis. And so I get back to the point that I don't know that it's a huge value at all.
You know, there are some who have even written about the issue of marketing sickness, you know, selling sickness.
Yeah.
Because if you can create the impression in the society that there's something wrong and that you have a solution, you sell the sickness, people believe that they're sick and they will look for a remedy, and
you've
just
got
happen
the solution.
To have the solution, right? You happen to have the remedy.
And this solution is a liquid one.
Anyway, so
absolutely.
So if we have to come down to a bottom line,
right?
Okay. First of all, the health claims, they're not supported, right?
No.
Okay.
And just to add something, you know, people say, well, what about getting vitaminized water?
Hmm.
Put your vitamins in water. Part of the problem with that is the same thing as supplements, because you know, the way the foods and the vitamins that we need are being packaged in a special way that we best absorb in the dosages we best need. Mm-hmm. Anything excessive to that gets excreted in the urine. So I think that there's a, unless people are deficient in vitamins, unable to get the vitamins, vitaminized water is overkill.
And they're only dealing, of course, with the water soluble.
The water soluble right. B complex vitamin C. Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you some rapid questions. Okay. Is that all right if I turn the tables?
You can do that.
All right. If I were to ask you, should we have vitaminized water? What would you say?
No.
No. How about if I said alkaline water?
No.
No. How about if I said magnetic water?
Definitely not.
Why so
because, definite? Because I actually, some months back, went and did some research on that and saw that there is not a shred of evidence to show that magnetized water has any health benefit at all.
Would you classify that in the same way as the controversies over chlorinated water and fluoride in the water?
Definitely not. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that when we look at what are the advances that have brought about the increasing longevity, if you look over the last 100 years, 150 years, there, you know, we're excited about heart transplantation, kidney transplantation, chemotherapy, stem cell therapy. All these things are just amazing things. But that's not what is increasing longevity. Mm. The things that increase longevity are clean water, sanitation, and immunization. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to chlorinating water and fluorinating water, those are things which are important and have kept it clean. Obviously, there's a debate about too much of either of them, and particularly fluoride, which has resulted in certain dental issues with people having staining and marking of the enamel. But
it's supposed to prevent
caries, dental cavities, and it has made a difference. Mm-hmm. And so if you were to ask me, is that needed and necessary? I'd say an absolute yes.
Okay.
It's a bottom line.
All right. So then, water should be hygienic, right?
Absolutely.
Water should be, you should get it in a form that is environmentally friendly.
And right? Hence the packaging issue.
Okay. And water should be safe. It should be potable water that is wholesome to use.
And right? That you can use with absolute safety and be sure you're not going to get diarrhea or vomiting problems.
All right. And we should have an appropriate amount depending on the conditions that we mentioned before.
Absolutely. And it is essential to life.
Amen.
And I think you can tell us there's another water that is essential to life.
Jesus says,
amen,
that he provides this water that should we drink of it, we will thirst no more.
And that's what we should aim towards. But in the meantime, we have the blessing, and hopefully everyone who listens to this will have access to pure, clean, drinkable water that will sustain their physical well-being, and also to the spiritual water that will give them a peace which is beyond understanding.
Mm. I've enjoyed talking to you about this, Peter.
Thank you, Zena.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of House Call. This podcast is designed to provide you with health tips and information on ways to improve your health. For more information on many health topics, go to positivechoices.com. You can also listen to this and other podcasts by going to araudio.org. Until next time, stay healthy and keep exercising.